So we are on or at the ass end of Black History Month. And much to my surprise and chagrin, I didn't talk much about Black History on my Facebook feed like I normally do during Black History Month. One of my Facebook friends, okay, last year when Black History Month came around, I posted a video project that I worked on for a anthropology class, 400 level. It was scientific racism. My final project for that class was a video. And I posted it to Facebook last year, and a lot of people liked it. And I guess it was so powerful that one person actually invited me to come do a talk about the effects that slavery back then has on contemporary society today. And I really wanted to be able to do it. It was going to be at one of the pubs in downtown Eugene, but I'm going to be traveling during that week, so I won't be able to do that talk. Maybe we can reschedule it for another time. I'm not sure. I'll have to talk to the young lady who invited me to do it. But since it was powerful enough to have somebody actually want me to come talk about it in person, like for a couple of hours, as opposed to just a 20-minute video that I did for, you know, that final project, which, by the way, don't even trip. A nigga got an A+. You might as well know that from the jump, ladies and gentlemen. I don't put out no half-ass projects, especially when it comes to race and racism or any of the schisms, really. Schism in general. If it's got to do with that, schismophobia, I'm on that shit. Okay? In any case, what I'm going to do this episode of the podcast, since it's the end of Black History Month and beginning of Women's History Month, is, and you know, intersectionality and all that shit, I'm going to go ahead, and that's what this episode is going to be, me playing that project for you guys. And of course, I want your thoughts and your opinions and stuff like that. Everybody loves a little bit of praise. I'm not really here for the praise. I mean, it's nice if I get it. I just want you to learn some shit. You know what I'm saying? Just walk away knowing something that you didn't know before you started listening to the motherfucker, okay? Can we do that? Can we agree to do that? I would appreciate it. In any case, this is your boy F Major, and welcome to the Great Divide Podcast. I'm your host. The official weapon of the show is wisdom. The unofficial sport is drum corps. And tonight, there are no sponsors, so we're just going to get right into the main content. This is my final project from 2018 for Anthropology 416, Scientific Racism. Let's start with the terminology. We're going to start with the term social learning theory. Social learning theory is basically the theory that you learn from people in your environment. So if you know how to cook a certain way, people in your environment cook a certain way, and when you grow older, you cook that same way, it's because you learned from them. It's the same thing with religion. When you have a Christian child, more often than not, when they become parents, their children are Christian too, because their children learned it from them. Social learning theory. Paradigm shift. We recently lost a planet. Pluto used to be a planet. You never hear NASA come out and say the science is wrong. What you hear them do is make a paradigm shift. So instead of them saying Pluto, it was wrong, that was wrong to call the planet, they shifted it from a planet to an asteroid or a comet or whatever it is now. I don't know. I don't keep up with that type of stuff. Cognitive dissonance. When you're used to living your life a certain way, and you have a certain set of values and beliefs, whenever you come up against something that disagrees with those, it causes dissonance. So like if you're a fat person like I am, and you know that food can kill you, and you eat a whole bunch of stuff you know you ain't got no business eating, every time you lift the ravioli up from the fork to your mouth, you have to practice a certain amount of cognitive dissonance to not focus on the fact that this is killing you. Same thing for like smoking. So, and it's natural for humans to remove the dissonance, to remove the things that are making them feel uneasy about what they're doing. That is an important concept throughout the journey we're about to take. Let's get started. In order to get the full scope of what I'm presenting, we have to talk about a couple of key figures. Let's start with TJ. Thomas Jefferson is once quoted as saying, "Blacks smell bad, are physically unattractive, dumb, cowardly, need less sleep, and are incapable of feeling grief." if a regular person said it, cool. Well, it wouldn't be cool, but you get what I'm saying. But with Thomas Jefferson saying it, now the lesser people have somebody they can quote. And they could be like, well, Thomas Jefferson said it, so it must be true. But let's break this down. Blacks smell bad and are physically unattractive. Anybody who studied Thomas Jefferson for a little bit know what's wrong with that statement. It was inconsistent with his behavior. He was raping slaves. Couldn't have smelled that bad. Physically unattractive. I was going to leave this alone, but I have to note, for him to say something like that, there must not have been any mirrors in the 1800s. Now, the thing, the interesting ones for me was needless sleep and incapable of feeling grief. What kind of dissonance was he feeling that he needed to believe those things? The workday for a slave was from sunrise to sunset. So that's why he would need to believe that we require less sleep. And the reason why he would need to believe that we are incapable of feeling grief is because he was doing what? Selling sons away from mothers and daughters away from fathers and wives away from husbands. You can't do that in good conscience, knowing that these people feel grief. So you remove that dissonance. Religious leader John Newton is quoted as having said, slaves are lesser creatures without Christian souls and thus are not destined for the next world. When the women and girls are taken on board a ship, naked, trembling, terrified, they are often exposed to the wanton rudeness of white savages. They were raped. The prey is divided upon the spot. Resistance or refusal would be utterly in vain. And then he wrote Amazing Grace. But I know by reading this, he didn't mean it for me. After all, black people are lesser creatures without Christian souls, and thus are not destined for the next world. Carlos von Linnaeus, a leader in science, father of anthropology, one of the fathers of botany, had this description for Homo afer. Black, phlegmatic, cunning, lazy, lustful, careless, and governed by caprice. And while all of that is untrue, I want to focus on this word lustful for a minute. That word alone, in a description from a scientist saying that we are promiscuous, was the catalyst needed for people to be okay with raping slaves. I just wanted to point that out. The reason I brought up those examples is because it is important to note that every major institution in America, politics, Thomas Jefferson, religion, John Newton, the Church of England, science, Carlos von Linnaeus, Johann Friedman Blumenbach, business, Richard Oswald, education, everything in between, were all complicit in providing the cognitive dissonance the country needed to make a barbaric institution like slavery okay. And in one fell swoop, dehumanize not only the subjects of their bondage, but themselves in the process. How do you claim to be the manifest destiny, you know, the civilizers of the world, enrich the enlightened, and engage in torture and brutality, you know, the type that came along with slavery? The answer to that question is you need to remove the dissonance. Remove your subject's humanity. We were no longer humans. We were animals. That in turn gave the institution of medicine the catalyst and justification it needed for its part in this hot, bubbling mess. Let's take a look. And from the institution of medicine, we have James Marion Sims, who is purported to be the richest, most wealthy physician of all time and the father of gynecology. My entire project was supposed to be about James Marion Sims. But as I finished the first draft, it was over 35 minutes, so I have to take his entire part out so that the rest of the project makes sense. And it sucks because this guy is the stuff of nightmares. I'm going to highly recommend that you get a book called Medical Apartheid, which details all of his and all of the experiments done on black people from slavery until the modern day. In this book, it is amazing. This man did stuff. I'll tell you a couple of them really briefly. He created the vaginal speculum with a pewter spoon by cutting into unanesthetized black women. Just imagine that. No anesthesia or anything, and it was available. Anesthesia was invented and was prevalent at the time, but he did not use it on slaves. He only used it on white women. He stuck shoe awls in the heads of new baby infants to realign their skulls. Needless to say, it was a 100% death rate. This man one time performed a surgery on a man, removed his jaw with no anesthesia,
put it back, and the man could no longer close his mouth. This dude is a nightmare. But let's just see what he had to say about race, because you know all the different institutions had to share their part. Well, let's see what he had to say. Sims reasoned that slave women were able to bear great pain because their race made them more durable, and thus they were well suited for painful medical experimentation, like I was saying, cutting into them with no anesthesia. So part of the reason why citizens, institutional leaders, even our own government seems to single out black citizenry for medical experimentation, biological, chemical experimentation, etc., is because, as James Marion Sims stated, black folks are apparently durable in ways that white folks are not. He stated our race makes us unable to feel pain the way normal, read white people, do. Wouldn't that make us superheroes, or at least superhuman? He said that in the 1800s, but it is a stereotype that is still touted and widely regarded as true, as evidenced by the testimony of Officer Darren Wilson. In his description of why he shot Mike Brown up to 12 times, he testified after the first shot hit Mike Brown that it didn't slow him down, but that it seemed to intensify his strength, that he became angrier, faster, and as a result came at Officer Wilson stronger. To be blunt, the coroner had a toxicology report that concluded the only substance in Mike Brown's body was marijuana. Weed don't do that to nobody. Weed don't make you superhuman, trust. And it certainly doesn't make one walk through bullets. Interestingly enough, the same verbiage was used by officers who beat Rodney King's ass. In fact, the sergeant said King's actions were consistent with the speed and strength of a person who was on PCP. In other words, superhuman. PCP was not found in King's system, but they sure whooped his ass like it was. I mean, they whooped his ass. Baby, I wasn't even ready. Today in contemporary society, we as a nation are struggling with what is referred to as the opioid epidemic. And when we think about it, who exactly is affected? White folks, right? But why? Why is it only white folks, or a supermajority of white folks, that is affecting? It's because of the superhuman stereotype. Many doctors still in 2017, 2018 have not, do not, and will not prescribe opioid-based products to black people because they believe that we don't experience the same level of pain as white folks. Today. So even a lot of them are holding on to the myth that black superhuman strength. It's scary. Now juxtapose the sentiment that some people actually believe that black folks have weird high tolerances of pain or some sort of superhuman strength with those who believe that we are inferior, that we are in fact the animals that our forefathers claimed us to be. We have been called everything from brutish to barbaric to monstrous to animalistic and some more shit. Besides the fact that all of these characteristics were on full display by the people who actually engaged in chattel slavery, they somehow projected those stereotypes on the black people. So much so that in places around the world, as evidenced by the section we studied on Sarah Bartman, black people were featured carnival freaks, sideshow oddities. In fact, they even had zoos where black people were exhibits together with or alongside animals, mostly monkeys and chimpanzees, primates, etc., that people could try to draw some type of comparison with, even in the United States. The Bronx Zoo in 1902 had a black man as an exhibit. Did you hear that? He was a zoo exhibit. A young pygmy man by the name of Otabinga. So it was curious to me why people were surprised that black people took grave offense to the H&M coolest monkey in the jungle controversy from a few weeks ago. On a black kid? Are you serious? In a country that actually had a black man in a zoo? What? Of course people got upset. And while the company H&M is from Sweden and not the U.S., it's important to note that Sweden was one of the countries that had a black people zoo exhibit back when that type of stuff was popular. So they should have known better. It is as if entities go out of their way to continue to perpetuate this animalistic image. It did not take much insight for moviegoers to tie King Kong to blackness. The moment they introduced the beautiful white heroine, people could automatically put together in that context that King Kong was an allegory for a brutish, animalistic black man. These stereotypes are so pervasive, in part, because as long as people do not let us forget them, they will exist. Say what you will, this is not a coincidence. The first time a black man is on the cover of Vogue, and this is the shot that they go with. The savage, the animal with the beautiful white woman in the midst of a primal roar, they didn't miss a beat, did they? right down to the blue dress. And it's not like they didn't have other pictures that they could have chose from. This is Norm Stamper, one of my heroes. He wrote a book called Breaking Rank, where he put all the police's business out there. Baby, he broke rank. Okay, so much so that he's been getting death threats and stuff like that. He was on the force for 34 years. He was the chief of police for both San Diego and Seattle. So he knows what he's talking about. I'm going to read two excerpts from his book as they pertain to the discussion we're having. I've heard some police officers referring to prostitute slayings and the slayings of blacks as misdemeanor murders, employing an unofficial code for them, NHI, which means no human involved. That's contemporary police radio chatter. You hear the dehumanization in that? Police, people who are supposed to protect us. But then it goes on. San Diego cops confessed a myriad of other acts of discrimination, including other dehumanizing references to blacks, just an 1113 nigger. And 1113 is the code for an injured animal. So do you see how scientific racism from centuries ago has cultivated the culture we live in now, where I can go out and get hit by a car through no fault of my own, and when the police get there, they refer to me as an 1113. Shit like that is why there was a Black Panther Party. Shit like that is why there's a Black Lives Matter. And if you are a policeman who has no problem with minorities at all, if you spend enough time around people who talk and act like this, you'll become one of them. Social learning theory. People react to trauma differently. Like when Hurricane Katrina hit, there are people who in its aftermath are doing just fine. There are other people who saw the footage on TV, wasn't even there, that are traumatized, in therapy, right now, still can't go close to bodies of water. However, I would submit to you that slavery wasn't one trauma. It was a centuries-long, multi-generational set of trauma. I submit to you that the murders, the rapes, the lynchings, the back-breaking labor, that no slave was left unaffected. And after centuries of slavery, do you recall anyone being offered therapy, counseling, or help of any kind? Then when slavery ended and the lynchings began, even more trauma. Recall any group therapy after that? I know things have been hard. You have to understand there has, of course, been residual effects from slavery. This is what is referred to as post-traumatic slave syndrome, as written in a book by Dr. Joy DeGruy Leary. Interestingly enough, she's a professor up at Portland State, and I highly recommend the book because it details exactly how those traumas from as far back as slavery manifest themselves in contemporary society. Now, the following are pictures of lynchings. And I want is for you to look at the people in the pictures. People wanted to be known as having been part of lynching so much so that they posed for pictures with dying and dead black bodies. It's important to note that lynchings came after slavery. Wasn't a part of it, it was afterwards. And it is often thought that it was only the white supremacists, you know, the KKK people involved in these. Look closely. These are regular, ordinary, everyday white citizens. And in most of these pictures, they got their church clothes on, which means either they were just coming from church or they put their good clothes on either for the lynching or for the picture. What's disturbing to me, the most disturbing, is the little children you see in the pictures, meaning they grew up accustomed to this in their adolescence. See the little girl in this one? She's smiling. And people often say, we know what the effects of slavery have been on black people. What have they been on white people? This right here. This is it. To look at a man being murdered and not feel it. Social learning theory. And how that translates itself in today's society is whenever you see on the news that another black unarmed person has been murdered by the police, you inevitably hear or see on the news and various people on your social media platforms all of the reasons why that person deserved to die. Not just Fox News, but even your neighbors and friends can't empathize with the victim at all. Social learning theory. So we know that most of the science we still go by in regards to race is wrong. All those stereotypes, black folks as dumb, shiftless, lazy, cunning, lustful, and governed by caprice. We know scientifically that's all untrue. So my question is, when do we get a paradigm shift? It was just announced that Pluto is no longer a planet. When is the announcement that black folks are just black folks, that we're just human, not lesser human, such as animal, not superhuman? Sounds stupid that we would need to announce it, but until the world hears it, they will continue to buy into all of the stereotypes without question. Well, some will anyways. There was a part of the Matrix when Neo woke up in the real world. He asked Morpheus, "Why do my eyes hurt?" And Morpheus replies, "Because you're using them for the first time." Researching for this project has had the same effect on me. It hurt so bad because when you learn the horrific truth about who we are and what we've done and who we've done it to, the real world makes the Matrix look like paradise in comparison.
You ain't got to tell me. I already know. That was a lot. And I understand that. But like I say, all I want is for you to have learned something. That's it. I hope you laughed a little bit. I hope you cried a little bit. I hope you went through the plethora, the lexicon of emotions that I went through when I was making that. Because the last part I said when I was talking about how hard it was to make that, oh man, it's enough to make you cry right now. The stuff that Negroes have been through in this motherfucking country. Oh, by God. In any case, I know some of y'all got some shit to say about it. You might have liked it. You might have hated it. Or in something in between. Hit a nigga up at frankie@thegreatdivide.us. Or you can join my Facebook. Or the Facebook group is The Great Divide on Facebook. Call the voicemail line at 541-357-7585. If you do call it, leave the messages to 2 minutes or less, or the machine will cut you off anyway. Let's see, is there any other way? Oh yeah, you can visit us at thegreatdivide.us. The website is under heavy construction because we're changing shit around because I'm putting on 2 more podcasts. In any case, I will see you at the beginning of next month. This show comes out once a month. Let's see, at the beginning of each month. This episode was a little bit early. This was the March 1st episode. So be looking for a new one on April 1st. Until then, thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining me. I hope you learned a lot, or even a little bit. Until next time, catch you on the flip side.